Hello, this is Brian Mackey. Before we get to this week's episode of State Week, I wanted to let you know that this program is recorded midday Friday, and in this case, that was before Governor Pritzker's executive order closing all schools in Illinois, effective Tuesday, March 17th through the end of the month, March 30th. This is part of the state's ongoing effort to slow the spread of COVID-19 in Illinois. The governor is also urging people to not go out to the extent possible.
So please, this weekend, if you can, stay home. This isn't forever. This is a sacrifice in the short term to help our hospitals, our healthcare workers, our testing laboratories, and our vulnerable and elderly residents. We all have a duty to each of them.
So as always, thank you for listening to State Week. Thank you for downloading the podcast. I hope you are listening from home, not from out and about. Stay well and on with the show.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The number of cases in Illinois has doubled to 32 in just 2 days.
Today, the number of Illinois cases rising by 7. For the first time, a child testing positive for the virus. Now in good condition, officials say, and recovering at home.
The young child in Chicago is a reminder that anyone can be infected with this virus.
Illinois joining other states in curtailing large gatherings to combat the spread of COVID-19.
I know that some people will ask whether these measures are necessary in counties and cities that have seen very few or no positive coronavirus cases. Don't be fooled into thinking that your community is immune. It is not.
We have to continue practicing social distancing. And if you do not feel well, for God's sake, stay home.
At Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Governor J.B. Pritzker before her, the news this week was dominated by the spread of the coronavirus. A lot of cancellations taking place, including the Illinois General Assembly, at least postponing session for a while. We'll discuss the state's reaction and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and with me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. He's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us is also the IPR State House editor Brian Mackey and our colleague Mary Hansen joining us today. And Mary, good to have you on once again.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, I'll go to you first. The General Assembly saying, you know, we're not coming back after this week off or so here that they've had. What do we know as far as what's going to happen for the General Assembly and the things they need to get done?
Well, we know that they are taking a pause for a week. I would expect, I would not be surprised if that got extended. Things were changing by the hour, literally, this week. You know, first, the NCAA tournament was going to play its games in empty arenas, and then eventually they just called off the tournament. Same sort of complication came with the Illinois High School Athletic Association, which was going to have a very limited crowd size for its games, and they called it off. The General Assembly was actually on the earlier edge of calling off session for next week amid all the cancellations that we've seen, really on just Wednesday and Thursday of this week. And so it would not surprise me if they called it off altogether for at least a month or so, as the governor has done. Although, really, there's no evidence that this disease is going to work its way through our society in a month. So, I mean, these are all things that are going to have to be evaluated on an ongoing basis. There are a couple of must-do things, though, this spring. I mean, conceivably, you know, the bills to, you know, designate the state, you know, cornbread or things like that, those kind of things don't have to get done. But the state has to have a budget in place. It may have to have some supplemental appropriations if this gets very expensive to continue mitigating and treating the ongoing coronavirus disease. And there's also, as Rich Miller of Capital Facts reported on Friday morning, this question of federal reimbursements for the Medicaid program. And there is something that, by some estimates, has to be done by April 1st in order to give the federal government 90 days to approve the state's assessment program. And I'm not going to get into all the details of it because, frankly, I don't know that I understand all the details of it. But basically, the General General Assembly is supposed to pass this big package of the way it collects money from hospitals in order to make sure it continues to get literally billions of dollars from the federal government for health care.
Charlie, go ahead, Charlie.
That's a program that was enacted last year, but it was enacted for a one-year period only. So I would not be surprised but what the General Assembly makes it permanent. And you're right, Brian, because you look at it, there's what, I don't know, there's probably 15,000 bills that have been introduced since January of 2019. The state has existed for more than 200 years without any of those. So we could probably get through another year. But there are must-dos, and the budget, of course, is the biggest one. Now, we were able to get through a two-year period without a budget because there were certain things that happened automatically. One of the big things that does not happen automatically, maybe the biggest, is that there will be no money for universities, which would be a huge blow based on the fact that universities are still trying to recover from that budget impasse that occurred towards the end of Bruce Rauner's term.
Yeah. And I mean, you wonder, you could imagine, well, could they meet remotely? As far as I know, there is no sort of provision in Illinois law or certainly not the Constitution to allow them to sort of vote and meet electronically. They could meet and sort of close the building off and not let people in, although there are lawmakers who say allowing public access to what we do is essential. It's core to who we are. You can't shut lobbyists out. But, I mean, these are the sort of things that are going to have to be weighed as we enter this very different period of life that we're about to go through here.
Yeah, I could see everything being done remotely with the exception of actually being on the floor to vote for whatever the package is.
And I guess you could bring people in even intermittently if you wanted to do it, something like that, where they're not all 118 people in the House at one time.
In Illinois, it's not like in Congress where if you watch C-SPAN, you'll see the votes last a half hour sometimes. Usually in Illinois, it's 15, 20 seconds, but there's no reason they couldn't just hold the roll open and just have people come through in very small groups. Yeah.
This is the season when we see a lot of lobby day events. A lot of groups come and they bring large gatherings of people. But Mary, those have pretty much all been canceled for now, at least. And the governor coming out on, I believe it was Thursday, making an announcement about limitations of crowd sizes, gatherings in the state. They want to make sure that we don't see huge numbers of people all in one place.
Yeah. So the governor came out saying, putting their ban at 1,000 people for the next 30 days. We've also seen some smaller, some counties, some cities sort of putting in place their own bans. For example, in Sangamon County, they just announced one yesterday, and the numbers that they put out were 250 for indoor events and 500 people for no more than 500 people for outdoor events. The governor, while the statewide ban says 1,000 people, he also encouraged that 250 number. Although we are seeing some counties pick smaller numbers. I think the smallest one that I've seen so far is Winnebago County up in northern Illinois, limiting public gatherings to 25 people. So that's quite a small event. While some institutions like the University of Illinois are saying 150 people should be the maximum. So we're seeing sort of some different numbers, but all kind of pushing in the same direction, looking at limiting exposure and spread.
And it's actually hard to imagine that many people getting together for too many things because everything seems to be canceled right now. But let me go back to Brian. Universities have announced pretty much most in the state right now are announcing that they are going to, some cases, extend their time off, their spring breaks. But when they do come back, they're looking at a remote way to teach, possibly and most likely through the internet.
Yeah, and each university has a slightly different policy in place. So I would say if you are a university student or you have kids or relatives in university, check with their particular rules. I can speak most to the University of Illinois' policies because that's where we all work. And they are extending, at least here in Springfield, extending the spring break by a week and urging the professors to use that time to figure out how to finish this semester online using digital tools to have lectures that you can web stream and have just all the interaction be online. Universities have this technology in place. Here at UIS, a lot of the classes are online already anyway, so this shouldn't be too disruptive in terms of this semester, but obviously this is a major change. Different universities are also, even though UIS is telling students they can stay home with their families. They can also come back here if they live here, and there are plenty of students who this is where they live. They don't maybe have a place to go other than this. And so the food service will continue here, but every university is handling that in a different way.
And Mary, while universities might be set to have this this online education, a lot of local school districts probably are not. And so far, we have not seen some mass announcement that schools need to shut down, but they are talking about it.
Yeah, so we have seen some schools in Chicago shutting down. I think the Catholic schools announced that they are closing. But here in Sangamon County District, or in Springfield District 186, has said they're going to remain open for the foreseeable future, although they are sort of trying to look ahead and plan for plan for potential distance learning or e-learning, as Brian mentioned. Yesterday at the Sangamon County Public Health Department's news conference, somebody actually asked about schools. You know, should this ban on gatherings of more than 250 people, shouldn't that apply to schools? And their answer was, you know, for most of the day, the students are in smaller classrooms and they're in these smaller groups. And as part of District 186's statement yesterday, announcing that they're still going to go ahead with schools, but they're canceling outside events, they're canceling after school activities, and they said they're also looking to limit, these situations like assemblies or lunch where there will be a lot of might be a lot of students all at once. So they're looking to sort of break that up and try to find some ways around that.
And I suppose one of the reasons that there's been more urgency in the Chicago area is because there have been basically that's where most of, if I'm not mistaken, most if not all of the confirmed cases have occurred. And for example, the Chicago Archdiocese canceled school for all of its students, and that covers both Cook County, all of Cook County, and all of Lake County. And now there have been cases reported up there. And a number of suburbs have seen their school districts shut down, particularly ones where somebody was in the area, was tested and found positive. And so they've shut down. But I don't think it's happened in central Illinois yet, probably because we haven't had any confirmed cases.
Yeah, and we can get back to whether that means that there are no cases when we talk about the testing or lack of testing going on. But there are other reasons that people want to approach the idea of closing schools with more caution than they have other, you know, sporting events and concerts. For one thing, there are a lot of kids in Illinois who that is their most, if not only, nutritious meals they get every day, breakfast and lunch in some cases. And so what do you do? How do you support those kids? Yes, you might be saving them from a coronavirus infection, although kids are – the evidence we have so far is that kids are less susceptible to this particular disease, but they still can – are thought to be able to transmit it to the rest of their family. So that is a problem. But, you know, kids – thousands, if not millions, of kids in Illinois going without a nutritious meal every day is also a big problem. And then I heard a very interesting stat from an epidemiologist named Michael Osterholm. He's up in the University of Minnesota. I heard him interviewed this week. And he said something like a third of the nursing workforce in America has school-aged children. And if those kids are going to be at home and they're the primary caregiver for those kids, that potentially affects the medical system. We don't have a lot of slack in our medical system. If these cases were at 32 cases publicly confirmed as we go to air on midday Friday, if that continues growing exponentially as it has, I mean, it's doubled in just the past couple of days here, this medical system is going to be stressed and tested. And if you have these nurses at home caring for their kids instead of in medical facilities caring for patients, that could be a community problem.
And Brian mentioned the 32 cases that are confirmed as we sit down to record this show. But Mary, there are several tests that are pending at this point. There's also some discussion out there whether the testing is adequate right now. If enough tests are out there, if people are getting tested that need to be, that's the issue too.
Yeah. So I think from, again, caveating with the time stamp and the day here of recording, it looks like there's 92 pending tests statewide. Those are numbers from the Illinois Department of Public Health. And, you know, I mean, this is criticism that's happening nationwide, that there aren't enough tests and that we're not doing enough testing. So that's not, you know, just specific to Illinois by any means. I mean, we've talked about in Sangamon County, there's been 4 tests done. All have been negative. Peoria, our colleagues up there have reported there's 2 pending tests right now. And in McLean County, fewer than 5. So we're just sort of seeing a handful of tests here and there around central Illinois.
That's almost, you'd say that's pretty much true for most of the country. As a matter of fact, the Congress had a briefing from people from the Centers for Disease Control, and they were surprised to learn that we've only done, and this was midweek, we've only done something like 12,000 tests nationwide. Well, South Korea was doing that many a day. As a matter of fact, there was a commentator for one of the TV networks who pointed out that President Trump has sent out more tweets as president than there have been coronavirus tests so far.
All these shutdowns that are taking place, events being canceled, may lead to people out of work. We don't know at this point. At some point, we're going to see some ramifications from this. Brian, the budget, you know, you hate to think about finances in a time like this, but it's certainly on people's minds. And when you look at the state budget, Illinois is still not in great shape. And yet something like this could be quite a blow, I would think.
It could. And there have been a number of reports in the past couple of years. I've done this story, I don't know how many times now, from various credit rating agencies and budget watchdogs that say Illinois is uniquely vulnerable to a recession. And it's a lagging thing, but if people are not working and they're not getting paid, income tax is going to go down. If people are staying inside and not spending money to buy goods and not so much services, because those aren't subject to a sales tax in Illinois, but if they're not buying goods then and they're not traveling, for example, then sales tax revenue is going to go down, and that will significantly hurt the state and our locality's bottom line. And like I said, Illinois is uniquely vulnerable to this because we have so little in the way of proper fiscal reserves. Now, there are a ton of funds out there, and you know, some experts say that this is kind of Illinois' rainy day fund, as it just keeps it scattered around, and like the fees that doctors pay for their licenses and the fees that hunters pay for their licenses, and they can tap into these balances in an emergency for some amount of slack. But ultimately, if there is, you know, if this, you know, we've seen the markets take a real battering this week, that's not going to be good for pension investments. And if revenue income to the state government really does start to decline, that is going to be a problem. And you know, in some ways, we're still digging out from holes that were dug during the last major recession in America here in Illinois.
Charlie, when you put a budget together for the state, you look at they always look at budget estimates, revenue estimates, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I would think right now, here we are right in the spring, this is hitting very hard, going to hit hard on the economy. We may not know the full impact of it. It's going to be hard, I would think, to put together a full year budget. Should they be looking, you think, at something more, half of a year, things like that, just try to move things along, keep funding going? But I can't imagine how they can really, you know, understand what the true impact of this will be.
Well, if you look at the historical precedents, all the time that I was an active reporter, and I guess I actually started covering state government when Illinois' modern financial era began with the enactment of the income tax. But for all of those years up to the turn of the century, the one thing you could be sure of was that next year we'll have more money in our general funds than we did this year. It was something you could always count on, and the question was, how much more are we going to have? Then along came 9/11, and I remember the 2002 budget, which was just in its first couple of months, took a major hit. And when they put together the 2003 budget, George Ryan, who was the governor at the time, and the legislature cut something like $1 billion out of the budget, and the revenues still fell $1 billion short of what was needed to cover it. As a matter of fact, in that time span, the impact of 9/11 was a loss of something like $1.3 billion in general funds. And then a few years later, we had the financial crisis, And in that period, we lost something like $2.1 billion. And by that, I mean the revenues that came in during that time were $2.1 billion less than came in the fiscal year before.
And before that, Charlie, people forget, but there was a surplus in the budget, quite a good surplus. I mean, we were in much better shape than we are right now heading into this problem.
Yeah. For the fiscal year 2000, we actually had a $777 million balance in the general fund. In that, at the end of the fiscal year, after we paid all the outstanding bills, we were left with almost $800 million. Okay. And that deteriorated in the course of 2 years to more than $1 billion shortfall or deficit because of the impact of 9/11 and the recession. So we're kind of looking at that. And that's, as you say, that's what makes it so very hard to budget. On the one hand, there are things that will happen automatically, just as they did at the budget impasse. For example, unless you change state law, the pension payment will be made. Doesn't matter if they don't appropriate 1 cent. Comptroller, treasurer, law says pay whatever is certified as the required amount. The same thing with some of the social programs that are covered under court decrees. You have to pay those. And so the place that is really going to be hurt would be education. During the last impasse, we did have money for the schools, the K-12. This time around, it will require appropriation for that. So we could do it on a half-year basis, but if I'm a school superintendent and I say, well, here's how much I'm going to have to January, I got to hire teachers for the full year. I can't lay people off in the middle of the school year. Well, you know, so I think in some areas, they'd almost have to do a full-year budget.
Mary, I want to ask you, what should we be looking for in the next week? What should people be paying attention to, things you think might be popping up or going to hear more about, you know, especially in the public health front?
Yeah, well, one of the chief medical officer of one of the hospitals here who I talked to earlier this week really emphasized, he said, today's news is not yesterday's news and it's not tomorrow's news. So really, like, we need to, you know, if you're looking for the most up-to-date information, it really is on a daily or hourly basis. And so I think, you know, paying attention to the public health departments and, you know, looking at the testing, it's, we could potentially be seeing more expanded testing. That's what the health officials here have said, that they would like to see that. And with expanded testing, there could be, you know, potentially more cases, as we've seen in Chicago. And I think, you know, just with the schools and you know, all these events, I think we're going to be seeing more cancellations.
And we talk.
Well, and that's a good point, Mary, what you said about yesterday's news is old and today's is here, and in 20 minutes from now, it'll be different. And in the area of revenues, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the legislature's fiscal gurus, kind of their congressional budget office, just last week put out a very optimistic report updating what the revenue estimates were going to be for the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. And if I may quote from it, it said, the estimate of net income taxes is being revised up $33 million. And one of the reasons, they say, net corporate income taxes are in a position to exceed previous assumptions. Well, that's probably not going to be true.
Yeah,
but later they say sales taxes have outperformed expectations through February. And as a result of that positive growth, coupled with an updated outlook over the remaining third of the fiscal year, we're revising them up $172 million.
I think
from the estimates from last spring when they put the budget together.
And I was at the hearing where they talked about that, and they did add the caveat. Of course, we haven't incorporated any coronavirus. And I think this is just a good opportunity to put a button on this aspect of our conversation. But what a change a week makes. I mean, we were talking about this last week in a much more speculative way. Health officials were still saying the risk to Illinoisans remains low, they were saying last week. And now it is a very different story. They are taking a very different approach. And that same epidemiologist, I thought, had a good analogy for a way to think about this. You know, from the University of Minnesota, he said, you know, if there's a hurricane that's 5 days offshore, yes, the officials can tell you, well, the risk to you right now is very low. And it is. But the problem is something's coming and you need to start planning for it. And we've definitely – that hurricane is getting closer to us, officials are saying, and we need to start thinking about what these disruptions and how we're going to be living our lives differently for quite a few months to come probably.
And Mary, we talked about this earlier, but a lot of folks think that maybe these precautions that are being taken now are overblown. We're going too far. But at the end of the day, if we don't see as many cases as some people are predicting, maybe this was the reason why that occurred. Maybe it was a good thing. There will still be people who will question if these are the right – if this is the right way to go.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the flatten the curve graph out there. And I think it is one of those things where, you know, if it ends up being that we do avoid a lot of cases, or, you know, that some of these preventative measures are successful, people can still come back with the argument, well, it was overblown, or, you know, mm-hmm. the media over covered this or sort of overreacted. But if it sort of changes behavior and, helps with prevention, then maybe that was successful.
And which country are we using as our model? Are we going to be a place like Italy, where their hospital system is overwhelmed because the cases just exploded in such a short amount of time? Their curve was not flat. It was a very steep mountain. Short time span, high number of cases. Or is it going to be where you can spread them out gradually? Yes, the same number of people might get infected, but if it happens over the course of the year, the medical system won't be as strained.
Brian, just about 1 minute left here, but when it comes down to things we talk about this time of the year, especially in an election year, we have the primary, and it's a presidential primary, still a race going on in the Democratic side, and yet we're not hearing a whole lot about it. This whole virus issue has knocked that, I would say, off the front page. So are we expecting that anything's going to happen in the next few days? We're going to see these candidates popping in, anything like that?
I don't know. The Biden and Sanders campaigns had fundraisers and rallies planned here, and those have all been put on hold for now. And I should say they're not going to happen before the election, which is next Tuesday here in Illinois. Dick Durbin had an email to supporters saying he had suspended any in-person fundraising events, and he was emailing them saying, now's the time to step up online contributions. So politicking is still happening, but officials are urging people to vote early. And Mary, I think you've reported that they're moving some polling places around.
Yeah, I think early in the week we saw, you know, a lot of people are very concerned about the elderly population. They're particularly susceptible to this disease. And so there are polling places in senior centers and in, you know, assisted living centers. And so we had maybe a handful of polling places being moved here in Sangamon County. I know Champaign County has done the same thing. So, you know, if you're looking to vote on Tuesday, double check, make sure that your polling place is the one that you're looking for.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, there was some good news, at least historically speaking, in that our unemployment rates for the month of January fell. And for first time in 10 years, our unemployment rate was below the national rate. It was at 3.5%, which is a new record low for the state. And so that translated out to more jobs, even though there were more job seekers. And that's a good sign. Now, of course, this will be updated, and in a month from now, we'll maybe say, oh, my God, you know. Although, on the other hand, the administration is changing the rules, promulgating an emergency rule that says if you have to stay home, we're going to see that you get unemployment benefits for while you're there.
Okay. Mary?
Not to bring it back all to coronavirus, but the Sangamon County Health Department opened their dedicated line. And yesterday, the department director said they've had more than 250 people calling it to be patient. They have 8 phones that are ringing right now and people staffing those. So it just shows some of the anxieties and concerns, but hopefully people are getting good information and guidance there.
And Brian?
Yeah, the most important race, I think, to watch on Tuesday here in Illinois, speaking of the Illinois primary, is the Cook County State's Attorney. Kim Fox is a major reformer. She's an African-American woman, like many other people of that demographic who have taken on this particular job of prosecutor. She has been attacked, but she has put in some real changes that have measurably affected the Illinois prison population, bringing it down. And it'll be interesting to see whether the voters ratify that major change.
All right. That's all of our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Mary Hansen. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.